Welcome to the Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flary, and my co-host, Patrick Vernon, OBE. On today's show, we will be discussing the recent Jamaica 50 deportations.
Colourful Sinai and Patrick on Colourful Radio.
Joining us in the studio is Antonia Bright from Movement for Justice. Thank you for coming.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Please introduce yourselves for our listeners and tell us what you do at Movement for Justice.
Antonia, and I'm the chair of Movement for Justice, which is an organization fighting for justice, not on a single issue, but very importantly focused on the questions of fighting racism and standing up for immigrant rights. So that involves a lot of organizing in London and around the country. I speak in a lot of places, but I guess the largest part of our work is always about mobilizing people, because we have the capacity to fight for our rights, but it does take a method, applying a method and consistent just organizing to stand up, to know what our rights are, but to find the way to implement them as well. And we're in a real power struggle with a very hard right government right now. So it's a lot to do, but that's generally speaking what I do.
Okay. And Movement for Justice has played a key role in terms of mobilizing people and organizing protests in regards to the recent Jamaica 50 deportations. Could you tell me in more detail what you guys actually did?
So we had already been organizing inside and outside detention centers, and also around the Windrush scandal. And this is part and parcel of obviously what has highlighted the hostile environment that we'd already been in a struggle with. But so around these flights, it meant that we were also in touch, very quickly in touch with a lot of people who were affected. When a charter flight comes along, there's no forewarning. You notice, first of all, because of the numbers of people from a particular place being detained. And given that since the Windrush scandal, the government has not found it easy to reopen its regular deportations to Jamaica in particular, then we knew, you know, when that scandal broke, a lot of people actually got released. Some of our members were released at that time because the government would be embarrassed to be caught with how many people from Jamaica they had in detention from Windrush or connected to Windrush. So when we saw that there was a proportion being detained again, we knew that they were planning another go of what they did a year ago, which is to start rounding up Jamaicans. It doesn't mean they tell you the date. They don't tell you the information of when you're due to fly or anything. They save it for the last possible moment. And by law, they're supposed to tell you 5 days before. But they'll wait, so they'll detain you, but not tell you any date until the last minute. But it meant that we understood that this was in the works, and we talked to other organizations that we work with and talk to, and to figure out like when, and then just start organizing people.
Can I just ask you quickly, how long can they detain you for? Is there like a maximum time that, you know, they can detain you for, then they have to let you go?
No, there's no maximum time. I mean, I will say, first of all, though, detention really is traumatizing from day one. So there isn't really a time limit that we'd be seeking. We want to shut down detention centers. Mm-hmm. They're administrative detention. They're not detaining you for anything that you've done. It's not a crime, it's administrative. And that means that people, by and large, feel almost like it's like being kidnapped or something. Mm. So that it really is traumatizing from the start. There's no upper time limit. The longest that we, any of our members have been in YALS would have been 3 years. You know, and that was someone that we'd met in detention, had already been there a year. It's really bad.
So, Antonia, I know that you and your colleagues, Cara and others, you've been mobilising for a number of years. And the key hustle matter is about the whole stuff around widening Windrush, because the government's justification for deporting people back to Jamaica is they're not British, they're not Windrush, so therefore it's fair cop. What would you say to that?
I mean, it's been very cynical watching the government reduce and kind of like try and see who they can pick on in particular that they think that the public will be prepared to turn their back on. It's a gateway, because in the long run, the plan will be there'd be far more people caught up. That was why the Windrush scandal happened, because the hostile environment wasn't able to find enough people that perhaps the public were more inclined to turn their back on. So we're reaching further and further and further, and that would happen again. That's the intention with these flights, as far as I'm concerned. So today they say, oh no, it's only people with criminal records, serious criminals. We already know that's not true, because we see people who had sentences of less than 12 months, you know, for much more non-violent crimes, or, you know, things that you wouldn't consider particularly serious, and then bumped up with driving offences. So they could say, well, you've been convicted for more than 12 months. Well, what they mean is on multiple smaller charges, you've been convicted more than 12 months. People who have grown up, perhaps even been born in this country, it's possible to find yourself on that flight if you're born here, because of the way that immigration laws over decades have diminished people's rights, taken away the sense of citizenship, that it's not based on being here, growing up here, and being part of Britain, and the fact that you don't know anywhere else in the world. Britishness has been more and more based on race. It's actually, you'd actually have more rights being born anywhere else, so long as you had a parent or grandparent that was British and born in Britain, to be able to come here and settle. And that's part of the attacks that I think our communities haven't seen for decades, which we need now to take this opportunity to turn around.
Do you think that we should change the language? Should we? This, would you see this as a basically repatriation policy done by the Home Office? Oh no, they use the word. They use the word deportation. But is it? Because the way it's been reported in Jamaica regarding the flight, they use the word repatriation. Should we be explicit about that? Say this is a direct government policy of repatriating people who are British, but it's, you know, it's kind of thing that National Front talked about. It's kind of thing that Enoch Powell dreamt about. Now it's been implemented.
It's it really has gone a long way in that direction of kind of the policies that perhaps the Oswald Mosleys and whatnot dreamt of back in the day. I mean, it really is. It's that level, and the fact that you can see a MP who wrote to a constituent recently and in the letter made a point about, well, if you are worried about your family being separated, maybe you shouldn't come here in the first place. And it's like, well, that sounds exactly like, you know, and this is not the policy as it was in regard if you were white, if you were considered in the stereotype of what who belongs here. Because if you have family anywhere in the world, they will definitely have a right to follow you here and stay. But that Windrush generation didn't come in a bubble. They left family behind that they're still connected to. You know, there is a link between Caribbean and Britain, or the different African nations or Asian nations and Britain. There's a link, and it can't be undone without being destructive to families and real life relationships. So you may not have the piece of paper to declare it, but it doesn't change the reality that as human beings, you know, and as as family and people, you know, we're connected. And it just is an excuse where the government can cut off or exile one part of who you are and deny, you know, that connection.
I mean, you know, we had a deportation fight in February 2019, and also you were campaigning vigorously to stop that flight, and some people were got off that flight. Are some of the people that got off that flight in February 2019 were on the flight this year, or attempted to be on the flight this year? And have you maintained, I mean, and I was lucky, I was in Jamaica last year, and I did speak to some of the people that got deported, and they were suffering from depression, anxiety, obviously missing their family, and fear of their life.
I mean, firstly, there are people who have been repeatedly subjected when the flight has come along. But we also were fighting against the Jamaica charter flight before the Windrush scandal broke. There was, the year before, there was an attempt as well. And I recall there are some, at least one guy who was a due on that flight, and then you know, grabbed again after, you know, as you say, in 2019, and then grabbed again this year. So we know that there is this repeated, which puts you in such a limbo, you know, I mean, living under that kind of uncertainty, how does a person even have a chance to restart their life or move forward, or their family around them, because by and large, most people have young children as well, partners. But when we, before the Windrush scandal, we did a demonstration at the Jamaica High Commission. You know, we tried to get press on it. We'd been campaigning against the charter flights to Nigeria and other places already, so we knew how it goes. And it didn't make a huge breakthrough in the press, as little inklings. The scandal happened, and that really was an outpouring, as a lot of people who just hadn't realized anything about this immigration matter came out. The next time they tried a charter flight, you know, that was when they tried to make it, oh, just foreign national offenders. But the response from the public was bigger. We got more of a breakthrough. We were in touch with around half of the people that were due to be put on that flight. We were able to get the information and understand that, you know, we're not, the misleading line from the government wasn't true. We could find that out directly. Then obviously there was less people on the flight. I think there was about 21 people taken off that flight. So it was going nearly half empty, if you like. A year later is how long it's taken the government to try and pursue it once more and see if, you know, has the scandal broke,
could they get, could they get away with it?
Can they get away with it this time? And this time they can only manage to take 17 on that flight. So for every individual on that flight, it still absolutely turns your life upside down. And there is lots of reports of the risk that people are in after being deported, because they're in a country they don't know. They're basically like a tourist, but without any funding, like with nothing, with barely, you know, anything more than the clothes on their back, and with their whole life back in Britain that they may never see again. There's people who, when they're detained, at that moment where they're taken into detention, they're not even told where they're going. That may be the last time they've seen their children. So that's horrendous for them. But it is really important to remember that number keeps going down. And the amount of people who are mobilized to understand and see through the misleading lies from the government are more. This time around, 2 years past the Windrush scandal, there was actually a bigger response against this flight, and people were prepared not only to come out, but come out in the middle of a storm to demonstrate and shut down Whitehall. And it was shut down twice. It's powerful, obviously. Emergency demonstrations.
We're going to be interviewing the High Commission a bit later on, and I saw there was a tweet that was sent yesterday by Guy Hewitt, who was a former ambassador for Barbados, and in his tweet, which he copied me and a number of MPs, basically saying that yes, it's outrageous that the Windrush scandal's not been resolved, no compensation's been paid, no justice, and also the Caribbean governments are complicit in this. What would you say to the High Commissioner and the Caribbean officials? Because I know when I was in Jamaica last year, and I had a meeting with the foreign minister, and he was saying, Patrick, why are these people protesting outside the Jamaican High Commission? We've done nothing wrong. You know, it's, you know, why the, you know, we're the good guys. It was more or less saying. And I said to him, with all due respect, Minister, there is a protest, and quite rightly, because the Jamaican government is seen to be complicit in this process. And by the way, will you give them money for the prison? And by the way, do you get funding from the government? So I was asking, we didn't get a straight answer, but...
I was wondering something similar as well. I was wondering, can't they refuse the flight of deportees? Because I'd done some research and I found that Guyana, a few years back, they refused the flight that was coming from the United States, as well as countries like Iraq and Afghanistan and India. They say, well, no, these people are American or they're British. They're nothing to do with us.
As well as Barbados. I mean, the guy who I interviewed for was Windrush last year, he basically said that it's all linked to aid. He said that Barbados are not receiving any aid from the UK government, so they can say no. Whereas Jamaica gets a fair amount of aid, and the question is, does aid link to, is a relationship with deportation? And it's one of the questions I'll be asking.
So it's like bribery, basically. We're giving you aid, so when we send back you know, criminals who may be born in Jamaica, but they spent their whole lives in Britain, yeah. you have no choice but to accept.
I mean, one of the big question marks is that, you know, when David Cameron was Prime Minister, he went to the Jamaican government, they went to the Parliament and said, I'm going to give you £50 million for a brand new prison, as opposed to infrastructure, hospitals, education. And the question is still lurking around, has any money been given? I mean, obviously there are no new prisons in Jamaica, but is there something that we should be aware of?
Well, what kind of a situation are they telling us? I think everyone needs to get the message. If they're ready to build prisons, but not housing and not schools, then you know where they're planning your future. We can't accept that. You know, this isn't, you know, if it's about, well, we expect in the future more people need to be put in prison, well, why is that? You know, is it, how hopeless are they leaving people? What message does that send? But yeah, no. Yeah. Yes, they can refuse to accept the flights. Absolutely, you're right. Other countries have done it. Several other countries have refused to accept the deportation flights. So I think that's the message for those other governments. And also, let's remember that the Windrush scandal didn't happen out of a natural disaster. It wasn't something sudden that came along that we couldn't help. It was a policy made by people in government as part of a hostile environment with an intention. That means it came with statistics and expectation of who will be affected and how bad, and what will we do about that. And before that scandal broke, the answer was, doesn't matter, you know, no one will be able to do much. We're not worried about what will break out into the open. They got a shock. The government got a shock. Amber Rudd got a shock. I think a year later, Sajid Javid, as Home Secretary, got a shock.
He got two shocks.
If he could return to reminding everyone a stereotype that I remember from the 90s and the 80s, that Jamaicans and criminals were somehow synonymous. I remember, you know, all the headlines about Yardies, this and that and the other. And it's all, you know, there's an exaggeration there that's designed for middle England to feel like, well, black people are dangerous, you know, the government's protecting us from these multicultural, you know, societies, whatever. It's very sinister division that they're creating to keep their votes or whatever. No, these other governments should remember the same shock that Priti Patel now has had as well. This is unacceptable, and people will come out. They will know what this policy is about. We're not stupid. And they are going to be held to account as well. So that's why we'll demonstrate at the High Commissions over and over, because the governments in the other countries can say no. But in a sense, so long as they feel like the pressure is more from the British government than from the diaspora, they will feel like they have to go that way. And we have to mobilize ourselves. We can't wait for any of these politicians to do it. But these High Commissioners, the other governments, they knew about this policy because they're receiving people who are being deported, and they've been receiving them for years. So they do know. What they didn't know was that there'd be an outpouring of anger and that people would awake to it and see the injustice and act on it. That was the thing that was missing. So I would say, when you're next speaking to them, tell them again. We're all, you know, it's only getting bigger. The resistance is only going to keep getting bigger. And they need to respect the diaspora, because people are being put in danger, being thrown to a country they don't know. And it's destructive. The damage it does is greater than anything that any of the people have done who, frankly, have actually served their time for whatever it is they've done. But our government's not served any time for what they've done to people. You know what I mean? They haven't paid at all for the scandals that they've created. And the damage is still happening.
Yeah.
A powerful point to leave it on there for now, Antonia Bright. We're going to keep you in the studio because we're going to try and speak to one of the detainees at Colebrook Detention Centre.
Colourful Sinai and Patrick on Colourful Radio.
Joining us on the line is EJ from Colebrook Detention Centre. Can you introduce yourselves to our listeners and tell us a little bit of background in regards to your story?
I've been here 20 years. I've been in the UK 20 years. I've integrated my whole life here. I came here when I was 8 years old, primary to university, my own children and stepchildren here. And now I'm being held in IRC, begging to be released.
So you were obviously affected by the recent deportation. So you were meant to have been on that charter flight that left about a week ago, yeah? So can you explain your circumstances, why you were able to get off the flight and what's going to happen to you now?
Okay, so legally, I shouldn't have been put on the flight because I haven't had my day in court. So like, there's procedures to everything in life. So I haven't had my day in court, so they couldn't really put me on that plane, but they tried to serve me a ticket anyway. I spoke to my solicitors, and I've been like receiving loads of help from like a lot of people. So like the Guardian, and then Karen from Movements for Justice. Like a lot of people have been trying to help get this charter flight cancelled, because I don't see how like government can say that they're embarrassed about Windrush and you're still trying to sneak people out. But everyone's been pitching in. The signal failures here is a big help as to why my ticket got cancelled, because like we're not even able to call our own people, let alone solicitors and stuff, because the signal failures here it's just been drastic. So for like a week, 2 weeks solid, no one can get hold of anyone. Like you've got a signal on your phone, but it's saying that it just won't let you call. So it's like, how can you say you want to deport people when they can't even get hold of their solicitors to even fight their case?
Do you feel like you've been treated unfairly, like you've been punished twice for a crime that you may have committed and you've already served your time?
Yeah, man. Like, do you know what it is? I understand what I kind of get what the government want to do. I kind of get it, but not if you've been here over 10 years, like, and you've integrated your whole life here, I don't think you can justify it. So what I try to show people is, anything that I did here, I learned here. I didn't come from Jamaica at 8 years old with a plan of mass destruction to come and ruin England. It was never like that. I don't think anyone thinks like that. Personally, I don't think anyone thinks like that. But like, yeah, like anything I did here, I learned here. Do you know what I mean? Like, no offense to England or Red Hair, but I would have thought that made me more British to know that, like, okay, so I've started my life here, I've had the best times here, and I've had my worst times here. I've gone through learning curves whilst being in prison. Like, and none of my sentences, so I heard that it was meant to be people for hardened crimes that were getting sent out. None of my crimes and none of my sentences have warranted more than a year. So I've never actually been incarcerated for more than, like, no, I've only been incarcerated. This is the longest I've been incarcerated now, 7 months. So I got a 10-month sentence before and for a fight, and I served half of that. But then here, I've been in here 7 months with like minimal information, and being issued chartered flights. Like I haven't been here. Like, I feel like I'm begging to stay in a country that I've been at for 20 years. Do you know what I mean? I've started my whole life here. The wickedest thing is, I'm literally where they've got me in Heathrow. I grew up around here. Like, my high school's only like 10 minutes down the road from here. Like, I've had the best times of my life in this area, West Drayton, Hayes, Middlesex. Like, this is where I've life started for me, like, as a teenager. So it's just got me really, like, it's just got me feeling like I almost feel like some sort of scumbag to be asking or begging to stay in the country, because it's like I don't get how I've gone from having my whole life here, considering myself British. Like, I'll tell you what, the only time I stopped considering myself British was when I first got put into an immigration centre. So in 2018, when I first got put in, like, I saw the real dividing line between, I want to say us and them, but it just sounds so, for me, it sounds rude, like, because I've never considered myself us or them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've always considered myself a Londoner. Do you know what I mean? It's just weird. It's a horrible feeling to think that, wow, you've spent 20 years with someone. So imagine you've been with your partner 20 years, and then your partner just ups one day and says, you know what, I've had enough of this. I can't stop it now. Like, you got to go. That would break anyone, I'm sure. That would break anyone. So, like, a country that you've been in for so long, and you've developed in, and you've taken as your own, decides one day that, yo, you know what, we don't want you here. You're not good enough for us. Or do you know what I mean? Whatever reasons, we don't want you here. Like, your time's done now.
Yeah.
We've had fun with the tampon, but yeah, we're done now.
I mean, we can hear how frustrated you sound. I wanted to bring in Antonia from Movement for Justice to have a word.
I just was thinking, you know, what you're saying, because we know that inside detention, that's a lot of people, and one of the reasons, you know, that we've been able to do a lot has been the way that people have organized inside, talking to each other. And even though you start out as strangers inside, a lot of people have come together. And what you're saying is what we're hearing from so many people. I wondered if you comment, you know, that your story is quite typical. It's actually not the exception. A lot of people have done actually more time in detention center that's not supposed to be a criminal matter than they did in prison for whatever they actually were convicted of.
Do you think that's mad though? Like, yeah, I dig that, because like a lot of people are here in here as well. Like, they've got like 2 months, 3 months, like for driving and stuff. So like maybe driving whilst on a panel or something like that, but it's like they're not hardened crimes like they're being like it's being portrayed. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of people, in fact, there's loads of people like me. So like, I've never warranted any crime, so I've never warranted a sentence of anything over 12 months. Yet you still got me here. So what I found out was that basically what the government's doing is basically saying, okay, cool. Instead of this 12-month thing, this 12-month and over thing, and then we'll review someone, what we'll do is, if their crimes add up to 12 months, then we'll come and see them. And that's really cheeky. That's super cheeky, because in essence, what you're saying is, over a period of 10 years, if you was to get into any sort of like criminality or anything that warrants even a 2-month custodial sentence, what that means then is, Every time, you're just over the period of 10 years, if anything's to happen, that means you're going to add up all the time till it says 12 months. Do you know what I mean? That's shady. That's shady. Because I know basically what my solicitor firm showed me, they said that in 2008, when Tony Blair was Prime Minister, what he'd done was he made a law to say that anything that was 12 months and over warrant you to be seen by Home Office or be seen by Home Immigration or even automatic deportation. But he left it so vague that it doesn't really stay if it's 12 months at one time or if it's 12 months at, like accumulated or something like that. Do you know what I mean? He left it vague, so you can use, it's kind of like the government can use the law in which way they see fit, because he's left that bit so vague. So it's like, now they've clocked that, all right, cool. So you didn't say that we couldn't do an accumulator. So all right, cool, let's do the accumulator so we can get people out faster.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So like, man, like, so for me personally, so I got a 10-month sentence of ABH and two driving matters. So once whilst driving whilst on a ban, and second driving whilst disqualified, they both warranted 3 months. So for me, that was 16 months total. Even though, really and truly, you only spend half time. So 16 months, that would have been 8 months. So I'm still technically under the 12 months. But what they've said is, what they've done is they've accumulated it and done it for the whole time set out for you, not your half custodial sentence.
That's the thing that is so confusing.
They knew what they were doing, man. It's almost like they know what they're doing. Like, you know what you're doing when you do these things.
Yeah. I mean, sorry to interrupt, but I was just saying that's what sounds so confusing, because according to all the press reports recently, is that everybody who was detained or due to be deported had served 12 months or more for a serious crime, and you're telling us that's not the case. I just want to bring in Patrick here to have a word as well.
Yeah, sure. So I think what's quite clear, and you know, so we all feel for you and your family and what you're going through, it feels like what the government's doing, it's a policy of repatriation, not recognising how long you've been in Britain, what you've done, you've worked, you've paid your taxes, you've got family, all that kind of stuff. What's going to happen to you now? I mean, there is rumours of another deportation flight happening again. We don't know what date's been fixed. What are you doing, and what type of support do you need? And finally, what message would you give to Priti Patel and Boris Johnson regarding their policy and how you feel?
So what my procedure is now is, obviously, so you tried to put me on a plane. It didn't work. I got my ticket cancelled due to everyone's help. And it's like, so you would have thought the next step procedure was, okay, let me out. Because you tried to put me on a charter flight, which is like the main hand that Home Office can play is to put you on a charter flight. So if that doesn't run, you would have thought it would have been procedures to now release you. But it's not. It's now I've got to go through the court procedures again. Even though they cancelled my ticket, it doesn't mean to say I can be released. It means that I've still got to go through a procedure to say if I can be released or not. And even though they've said that, like, I've got barriers up. So my family status, so under Act of Article 8, you can't just deport me when I've got kids and a family life here. That's just, it's like you're trying to completely bypass that. So right now we're just working on going to court to even go for bail, and then, like, no matter what, I have to try and address this while I'm out. So no matter what, I'm gonna try and get my status solidified here. But I really, like, I want to join protesters and stuff for a Home Office, because it's just ridiculous. You can't do this to people, man. This is just getting ridiculous. Like, I've given away 7 months of my life for free. Like, I'm, like, my kids are missing me. My family, like, my partner's struggling by herself. Do you know what I mean? When you set up a family life, it's like, yeah, you assume that you can just live your family life. But then you've got things like this that circle around it that make it so it's harder for even my children. Do you know what I mean? So they can't even, they're not even progressing too, not that they're failing in school, but they're not as enthused as they were about getting school, and they're not as, I mean, it's like, my daughter goes netball, my son goes football. When I go and take them, and like, they've been so used to me taking them, like, now I'm not taking them, and their friends are asking them, so, like, where's your dad? Like, how come we don't see him no more? And they're so afraid of what to say, because they don't know the right or wrong thing to say, so they end up not saying anything. So it just makes them, like, more and more depressed and more down. So it's like my aim and game is to fully get out here in the next few weeks, because God knows I can't take much more of this. The fact of the matter is, if someone plays their best hand and you beat their best hand, you'd have thought the next logical step would be, okay, cool, let's not provoke these people anymore, or let's not provoke this person anymore. Let's let him out and let him fight his case properly, because we've tried to do him dirt and it's not worked. So, okay, let's give him his fair shot. And I think that's all a lot of people are asking for, is that just their fair shot. Because I think a lot of people would have all let themselves get deported had the government said, you know what, we'll give you back all your tax money, and if you've got a house here, we'll pay for your house. Right, we'll pay what you paid for your house, or if you've got a mortgage or whatever, we'll pay you what you're owed, but leave. I think a lot of people would have just upped and left. But because no one's willing to fork out for things like that, so the government's not willing to fork out when you've taken these people's money for years. For years you've taken their tax money. For years you've taken whatever bills they've had to pay. For years you've taken it. So why now not give them back what they want when you're deporting them? Like, a lot of people would have just, like, a lot of people would voluntarily leave. Like, because it's a case of that money that they've spent here, and say, for instance, they've got their houses here and rent here. So the money that they get from their house could situate them in their own country. And the money that they get back from the government would situate them in their own country. So they'd be able to start some sort of life. But when you've lived your whole life here and you've built your life here, like, there's nothing else out there for you. Like, yeah. there's nothing else another country can offer you. You've got your family life here and your own home and your own, like, do you know what I mean, your own little business and rare tech. There's nothing to make you want to leave. Do you know what I mean? It's like you've literally done everything the next Brit would do. You've done everything a British person's aiming to do. Get a house, have a family, maybe have your own business. Like, if you've got those things and you've hit that trifecta, I don't see why someone can just say, yep, well, you've been here 20 years now, you've hit that trifecta, but we don't want you here no more, mate. Sorry.
Yeah, EJ, I wanted to bring back in Antonia.
It's just on that, particularly the last part of that question about what that message for this government, Priti Patel and Boris Johnson. This is a hard right government, and they believe that they will benefit from showing that they're tough on anyone that they call immigrant, whether you would think of yourself that way or not. So in a sense, they don't shift, but I would ask listeners to really, we have to play it by ear a certain amount, because there will be another attempt at a flight. There will be other things around the corner from Boris Johnson, Priti Patel, and so forth. And we have to be ready to mobilize. So I would ask people to keep a careful eye on the follow MFJ Twitter feed. Watch out for the Barak and, you know, Colourful Radio and Patrick Vernon's Twitter feed as well, because you know on that grapevine is how we were able to mobilize in urgent situations, and there will be mobilizations. We're doing a speaking tour as well on the Wyden Windrush, which has to do with demanding that descendants and family members connected to the Windrush generation should have a right to be here too. We're also going to plan, there's going to need to be community mobilizations. We're planning to do like a sort of a community march and rally around in Brixton in early March. I think it will be around the 7th of March. Things like
well,
that.
Well, I'm coming with you, man. I'm really trying to push to get out now. It's like, because I know they say that that's coming out. So I'm like really trying to push to get out. So, yo, I'd love to be a part of that. I'd love to come through with y'all and get a lot more awareness there. Because what I've noticed is the public doesn't really know, because the Home Office is so sly about what they do and how they do things. And the public doesn't really know. So you know the chartered flight for Tuesday? It was meant to be a 6 a.m. flight Tuesday morning. They took everyone Monday night, 9 o'clock. They started coming to people's cells and coming to get them at 9 o'clock. And everyone was on the bus for 10:30 on their way up to... Where did they go to? Because it wasn't Gatwick they went to in the end. It wasn't Gatwick. My friend told me he was on the coach with them, but it wasn't Gatwick they went to. I'll find out where they went to. But it was Sheffield. That's where they went to. They went to Sheffield. So they grabbed everyone like 9 o'clock at night, threw them on the coach, drove up to Sheffield, had them on the coach to wait till the planes come up. But then whilst they were on the coach, my friend said that basically they kept calling people's SID numbers and names, so your identification number while you're in here and your name. And if your name got called, you were off, your ticket's been cancelled. Like, so my friend literally got right away next to the plane. He said if the window was open, he could touch the wing. And his name got called and he got off the plane. But it's like, that's how down to the wire it can be.
EJ.
Like, you can literally see a plane and then, yeah.
Yeah, so it's really, thanks for sharing your experiences and the passion and the anger, and that's going to give us the mobilisation to fight for you and others who've been detained as well. So on behalf of Colourful Radio, I just want to say thank you very much for being on the show, and really just keep up the fight, keep your spirit going. We're all out here rooting for you and others that have been detained across Britain and those who have been deported. So in solidarity, we're there for you.
All the best.
No, thank you, man. No, thank you all. Like, don't worry. Like,
and we'll keep in touch as well. We've got your number, so we'll keep in touch. We'll keep in contact with you as well.
Yeah, no, thanks, man. Yeah, I'll keep you all posted on the IRC diaries, I guess. But everyone in here, like a lot of people in here, I'd just like it to be known. A lot of people in here. I've been here 7 months, so I can see. I'm in it. I'm in the field with these people. A lot of people in here, they're good lads, they're good family men. There's like a couple 60-year-olds in here. Like, do you know what I mean? So you know, they didn't do it. They are not doing any sort of criminality. Do you know what I mean? They've been here since Windrush, and now they're being put back in here. There's even a guy that fought in the army, so fought for the special forces. And as soon as his tour finished, he got put in here. Like, I thought that was absolutely diabolical. So you can literally put your life on the line for the country and still get deported. That's crazy. But yeah, thank you all.
Thanks very much, and respect, and keep up the fight. We're there for you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, EJ. All the best with your appeal. Thank you.
No, thank you. Sweet.
Yeah, so that was EJ speaking from Colinbrook Detention Centre. That was one of the hardest things I've ever had to listen to, actually.
It was hard. You know what? I don't know if you've seen the film, 12 Years of a Slave. That reminds me of his experience of being a free man, being told you're a slave, then being detained, and then serving servitude on the plantations in Deep South, to eventually got freed. Mm. And the comparison between the treatment on the state in 2010 is no different to 1807, 1707, around enslavement. The parallels, the whole process is unbelievable. It's similar.
Yeah, I mean, Antonia, what did you make of EJ's story?
Well, yeah, this is why it's to get people to realise that this is actually typical now of what the policy of the government is. You know, this has not got anything to do with what they say it is. It's extrajudicial. It's like being kidnapped into a scenario that you couldn't have imagined, because it's outside of all of what you would understand as due process, fair hearing, you know, habeas corpus, any of these things, and it's happening all the time. So I think we have to dispense with the stigma around criminal records, because it's not about the crime. It's we should be a society that can understand that people get second chances and we move on with our lives and things change. And that, you know, if we don't stand up for that as a right, our human rights, then we're dispensing with things that we will be shocked by later on, you know.
Yeah, very powerful show. It was always going to be emotive. It was always going to be moving.
And that's why we're doing it. We're doing this because we have to let the public know what's happening. Because I've done media interviews. You've done, Antonio, you've done media interviews. And obviously, you have 1 minute to make your point. But also, but in the context that it's all criminality. And almost we have to justify or explain that it's not criminality. But majority of journalists and the media outlets don't see it that way.
Yeah. I think for me, what was shocking was to hear how long he's been there. 7 months, and how close he got to actually being deported. How close it is. You know, it's last minute. They come and get you at 9 p.m. at night. You know, we don't really get to hear all those details. So that's why we have this show, The Voices of Windrush. That's why we have this platform, and we're always grateful for Colourful Radio to allow us to do shows like this.
Colourful Sinai and Patrick on Colourful Radio.
Hi, thank you for joining us on the line. We wanted to know a little bit about your story and how you ended up being detained in Moreton Hall.
Can you just tell about how long you've been in Moreton Hall?
Almost 3 weeks now.
And what was your circumstances?
I went to sign down and they just said I have a deportation order, so they're going to remove me from the country. And I said to them, I have an appeal coming up in March. Why are you detaining me? And they said, because the case that you're going to court for, the deportation order, is more substantial, so we're going to do your removal. So you can stay. You don't have to go to that hearing. You can hear it when you're abroad.
Okay, so what was your circumstances for your leading to be detained in the first place?
Yeah, because I went to prison on drugs offense from 2003.
But that seems like such a long time ago.
Yeah, it was from 2003, and I have 5 kids, and my oldest is 18, and my youngest is 3 years old.
So you've served your time, you've come back out into society, you've rebuilt your life, turned your life around, had children, and you've still been detained and ready.
I was also working with a company, because the application, they give me rights to work. I was working for a company for 3 years, and they know I was working and things like that, and they just take it away from me.
That's absolutely horrendous.
So what is your current situation now? Because obviously you didn't get on that flight.
Yeah, my current situation now, I put in, I still have that application to go court on March. So my solicitor said he's going to see if he can put in a bail application, so if I can get bail. And while I get bail, they will want me to sign down, so I will just have to sign down like how it is before. Because normally I used to sign down and I never abscond. I always go and sign down, so I don't know if the judge will be in my favour when I go for bail.
So, obviously, we've been, this program, we've been interviewing a number of people around the whole Windrush around the deportation situation. What message would you want to give to the government and the Home Office regarding your treatment?
Now, the message I would send, because right now I'm suffering, because I can't sleep good in the night. And before this, this is my fourth time in detention centre, yeah?
Your fourth time, you said?
This is the fourth time they've been detained me, but this time is the worst time, because I went to the airfield and see all the security, the police, the dogs. I see the plane. I've been in the coach from 10:30 till 12 o'clock the next day. And I suffer from high blood pressure, and I was on depression tablets before, because I'm very depressed and things like that, leaving my kids, I can't sleep. But since I've been to the airfield and see the plane and everything, my head is hurting me. I have flashback when I'm sleeping. I can't sleep. I wake up in the morning and I just can't picture what happened and things like that. So I'm suffering from high blood pressure. And since what happened, my head is hurting me. I can't sleep. I can't eat properly because I don't know what's going to happen next.
Do you have any medical attention or support while you're detained?
When I came in, they know my history. Say I'm suffering from high blood pressure and I'm on depression tablets. And they give me my medication because they know what my history is all about. But when I came in on that day, when I go to the airfield and came back on the morning, the 12th, my blood pressure was so high. The lady will have to put me down to sit down, and then she said, have your blood pressure tablets? I said, I haven't have any. And then she give me one tablet, and I take it, and she said, in the afternoon, they will check my blood pressure again. But since they give me the tablets, they haven't checked my blood pressure anymore.
Yeah. I mean, have you been able to contact your family and your friends while you've been in there?
Yeah, I phone my missus and stuff like that. But because I'm over in Martinhall, it's just like it's far for her to travel. So I only communicate by phone. And sometimes she calls me. I can't get the call because right now I stand at the window talking to you. If I move from the window now, I can't talk to you because the phone just cut out. The phone signal is not good up this side also.
Right. Have you been able to contact your lawyers from Martinhall despite the bad phone signal?
Yeah, since I came here, I contact my lawyer twice.
How long have you been there?
From the 12th. The flight was supposed to leave on the 11th, and then the same day they came here with us on the 11th, or the 12th.
So do you know what's going to happen next to you then? Have you got any idea what's going to happen next?
We don't know what's going to happen to us. We're just here in a limbo. All we're saying... everyone's saying we need to put in so we get bail. That's all we're saying, because I spoke to the Home Office and said I was signing on, and I went to sign on and they detained me. Wouldn't you guys let me out? And then I start back the same restriction by signing on. He turned to me and said, no, we don't let out no one that came in detention. You have to go through the court system.
So you have to go through a whole new system to be let out?
Yeah, that's what the immigration said to me. You have to go through the court system. We're not letting out anyone that gets detained. They have to go through the court system. But I said to them, I went to sign on and you lot detained me. It's not like you came to my house and detained me and I did have con. You know I was working, and you know I'm where I live. My missus is my surety and stuff like that. I have a home address. And everything was all right. If you let me out now, it's the same thing. I will go and find them. He said, no, you have to go through the court system.
Yeah, yeah. We thank you so much for speaking to us. We will let you go now. Thank you for joining us on the Voices of Windrush. I mean, we stand in solidarity with you, and we do hope that you are able to get some answers.
Thank you for calling. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks very much again. Yeah.
Colourful.
Sinai colourful, and Patrick colourful Radio.
You have been listening to a very powerful episode of The Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flary, my co-host Patrick Vernon OBE, and our special guest in the studio was Antonia Bright from Movement for Justice.